Okay, great. So today I'm going to talk about holographic view of non-abelian brain embedding and applications. And this is a paper hasn't been out yet, so any suggestion is welcome. It's my work with Andreas Karsh in University of Washington. And so first, this is like the outlines of today's talk. And first, I'm going to introduce a couple of background, like what's Maya's effect. It's probably familiar to a lot of people here already, but I will just introduce it a little bit. And also, there's how we do brain embedding to realize this integer quantum Hall effect under strong interactions. And after that, I'm going to get into the work, the main topic today. So we study a system, a brain embedding system, which has this non-abelian brain structure. And it also has a deal in field theory side. So the system we're studying is similar to the brain realization, this D3, D7 brain realization of quantum Hall effect, but it's a little different as well. And then I'll discuss the whole thing. And so first, what's Maya's effect? So we know for deep brains, if you have many deep brains on top of each other, and so every deep brain has like a U1 symmetry. If you have n deep brain on top of each other, this U1 symmetry got enhanced to UN symmetry. So that's a property of deep brain. And this people has known before Maya's like this UN symmetry, there is this UN symmetry, and it reveals some non-abelian structure of the many deep brain together. And then until Maya's, he explicitly derived the action of this non-abelian brain on non-abelian the whole set of many brains. And so the subtlety here is you should write down this BI action, Born field action, and it's compatible with T duality. This is the form of the non-abelian BI action for this non-abelian structure. And this is what Maya's wrote down. And so this P means pullback. So the G is word volume, and B is a gauge field on it, and P is in brain embedding, pullback of the brain embedding. So it's a the metric for the brain, and the F is a gauge field. You could turn it on or turn it off. So this phi would be the coordinate. So what Maya's effect say is a brain, many brain on top of each other, and their coordinates, it's also a scalar field, could be described by, well, to some order, could be described by a nonlinear sigma model. And also, if they could be enhanced to a matrix, and those matrix would be non-commuting to each other. If we assume this scalar, this coordinate metric is small compared to the leading order effect, then you can do expansion. Like, so higher expansion according to the power of your phi, the brain coordinate. So because the brain is also charged under RR charge, so it's gonna couple to the N plus one form R potential. So in abelian case, there's also a Cher-Simon term you could write down. And when the whole thing got generalized to the non-abelian case, so you should write down a trace here. And also there's some expansion here. That's a difference compared to abelian case. And Maya's also wrote down this term. This is all very abstract. And now,
sorry, which of these things was the actual effect that was named after?
The actual effect is here is an example. I think you know it after I talk about example. So the example, so basically, like if you have many brains on top of each other, their coordinates would be become a matrix. That matrix means, so the eigenvalue of those matrix basically corresponding to all the positions of the deep brain, and they also have some off-diagonal elements which corresponding to the massive excitation stretching between those brains. So if you intuitively you think about it, it's basically like the whole bunch of brain got puffed up into some expensive object. That's Myers effect.
More precisely, Myers effect is that cubic term that you see with, which is anti-symmetric in phi I, phi j, phi k, which would be zero for 1 by 1 matrices.
Yeah. So Myers also gave an example of the dielectric D-brain. That's how he named those matrix form the D-brain, of D0 brain. So he turned on a flux, a four form, which is like that. So this D0 brain is at zero direction, and he also turned on a four form. And the trisomy term from last slide could be returned as this. Well, through some derivation, only kept up to cubic term. It's that. So the whole thing assume this phi is small compared to, well, they could probably be arbitrarily small. This is an assumption. And the potential would be this. So this term is a quartic term, comes from the non-abelian, it comes from this thing. If you keep up to the quartic order, that would say, so the whole action would be the term which looks like abelian case and plus this potential, which is the whole potential goes to zero if those are phis are numbers. So the commutator goes to zero, that will go to zero. So to solve this non-abelian structure, and you take the derivative of those your variables phi, and then you get equation of motion. And then Maya say, well, then you can use the SU2 algebra and such, the commutator equal to that. And this alpha is it's a representation of SU2 algebra. It's polymatrix, 2×2 polymatrix in two dimensions for two brains, and it's like a spin one matrix for three brains and spin three half something. It's a matrix form which is a representation of SU2 algebra. And you plug that one in and you get a solution. This is your solution. So first it could up to n brains, and that would just be n-dimensional matrix. And as I said, and all the eigenvalue of that matrix would be the position of the brain. And this phi would be x1, x2, x3. So if I draw a picture here, so first you have a D0 brain like this, and then you have a whole bunch of flux in every direction, like 1, 2, 3, every direction. And what you're getting is you get this. So the brain will puff along the flux direction. I think this is a direct picture of this, how to see this puff the brain. This flux is along this direction, so it will puff up this direction. So in this one, we say the brain pop up into 1, 2, 3 direction. And also Myers argued, so it's hard to think about this non-abelian structure of the brain, but this whole system has a dual picture, which is more standard. It's a bound state of D2 brain with N D0 brain. So if you study the D2 brain action with the U1 gauge field turned on, and that gauge charge would correspond to N D0 brain, and you study like the energy of the system, and it matches the energy of this pop the whole bunch of D0 brain up to 1 over n squared order. And yeah, so this is
In this D2 brain picture, does the D2 brain source the 4-quorum flux that you had originally? Probably not, right? You only have one D2 brain, so it's going to be too weak. So it doesn't give...
You don't need a flux in this picture.
Yeah, you do, because otherwise the D2 brain collapses. The flux.
The flux keeps the D2 brain from.
Okay,
from
so
it's, there's still a background flux in this other D2 yes. brain picture also.
Okay, that's right. So they also have D2 brain is also has a gate field turnout, which is like the ND0 brain. It's like a ND0 brain bonding. Okay. So let's talk about a little bit about quantum Hall effect. So quantum Hall effect, I think everyone here has heard of this name. So it's originally integer quantum Hall effect is in 2+1 system, and it's you have a 2+1 system, like for example a film of like a blanket of something, some material, and you turn on a magnetic field, and then from what you learn from E&M, it's all those fermion like quantum particle, normally they call electron, and will form a Landau level. So we would say before those fermions are massless, when you turn on magnetic field, because they occupy all the levels of Landau level, so they will become sort of like a massive. We call it, will be gapped. So the bulk system won't have any massless degree of freedom. But what they have is a gapless surface mode, which normally people call it a topological mode. So quantum Hall material is also a topological insulator, just because you gap the bulk. So the only conducting mode left is a gapless surface mode. And those gapless surface mode is a topological mode, so it's protected only by topology, which means if you have like defect or some weird deviation in the bulk, or have it's like just your sample is impure, but you can still get those surface topological mode won't be influenced under those defect or impurity or anything. So people found it by measuring the conductivity, the XY, not XX, XY, conductivity of the sample, and they found this conductivity is it's really accurate, stick to this formula. It's n is a, for the integer case, n is an integer. So they found it like you have those plateau and corresponding to different number of n, and that measurement is really accurate up to like 10 to minus 6 order, which normally you won't be expecting that because your sample could be, you have like experimental error. The way to explain the whole thing is because this is like a topological thing, so it's like really protected. So different n corresponding to how many Landau level gap mode field. So we have two kinds of mode. One is a bulk mode, another one is surface mode. And bulk mode will get gapped by magnetic field, and surface mode is still stay massless. So before you gap the bulk mode, you will just say a conductor, and you won't be like separate the gapless surface mode at all. And only when you gap the bulk mode, you will get an insulator, but the surface mode will still be conducting. And so that's why it's called topological insulator. I hope it's clear. Are there any questions? So as probably we all know, like topological insulator is not only in 2+1 dimension. You can do this sort of like insulating the bulk, conducting on surface thing in many different kind of, probably in every directions. And it's always under certain discrete symmetries. and it has been a really active topic in condensed matter. And so people has also studied the gravity view of this quantum Hall effect. So the benefit of studying in gravity set is you can put the ABS background to add the strong interaction to the problem. But so their result is you can see you still have this plateau-like transition. So this is a paper by Joshua Davis and Klaus and those people, and from 2008 or 2007. So what they were doing is they use a D3, D7 brain setup. It has 6 NP directions, and so there's no tachyon, and so they use the standard ABS background. The only thing different is they use a deformed ADS background, so it's not a pure ADS. The reason is that is if they use a pure ADS, there's instability associated with the problem.
Excuse me. Is this line element the solution of type 2B, or can this be embedded into a solution of supergravity?
You mean the deformed ADS?
Yes, the deformed one.
I think so. Just people are not quite clear what kind of system they are. They do too.
Is this the metric that they're calling deformed, or is this you then modify this somehow?
No, I think it's this one.
They use this one.
It's like a standard
black hole.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They basically just heat it up. You add a finite temperature.
Yes.
They also use that metric to study zero temperature.
They also use what?
They also use this metric to study zero temperature.
They use that to study zero temperature.
Are you sure this is like the usual, because there's a square root of f in front. This doesn't look like the usual.
Yeah, and it's also has a sphere.
Has an
arm. It's a sphere, not
a plane.
It's
an spiral.
It would be right for a plane, right?
Yeah.
Well, you need the sphere to be a plane.
Well. Come on, if h wasn't there, if r plus is zero, that is the metric for a D.
It's a global coordinate. No, this is in global coordinates, right?
This,
among the
yes, this is a 10D metric, word volume metric.
Yeah.
So it's the ABS.
No, it's fine. It's a standard.
It's a 10-dimensional metric.
Right.
That's the metric for the usual D brain of the right dimension.
Yeah,
it's a string metric for some.
So this is not the metric of ADS5, this is the metric of
D3. No, it's not ADS5. It's some D-brain.
It's a D3.
Well, so you're basically saying this 10D metric could also be like a 10D D-brain?
That is a solution, a 10-dimensional solution of string theory.
Yeah.
And that metric, I mean, we can just 5, 6, 7, okay, so there's 3 X's. So that's a standard D3 brain. It's a black D3 brain metric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they use it as a background. This solution is the background of this D3, D7 system.
The D3 system, the D7s are not there. You have to add the
D7. That's right, it's a whole bunch of D3 brain become this like ABS-like part thing.
Back reacted to D3 brain, but not to D7 brains.
That's right, because they do D7 brain embedding in problem.
And a program.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's an ordinary solution.
So, but it's not a normal ABS solution.
No, it's not ABS.
That's right. So.
You haven't taken the near horizon limit, is another way to say it. It's the full asymptotic flat solution.
So they do this because if they do normal ADS5 cross S5, they won't get a stabilized solution. So they choose this one. So, if you look at this system and the field theory field theory direction is 0, 1, 2. It's a 2 plus 1 dimension as a quantum Hall effect we were talking about. They were trying to use this system to study quantum Hall effect. So,
wait, where's the magnetic field?
I'm getting there. So, and also, there's no magnetic field because, the fermion, the D7 brain have the, have like an NF fermion live on it. Well, it's due to this fermions in field theory, say. And the thing is, it's an effective field theory description of the whole system, which after you gap the system. So there's a gapped fermion in the bulk, like in 2 plus 1 direction, and those fermion has a mass, because before you gap the system, you would only have massless mode in the bulk. Well, you will have massless mode. So the effective description of the whole system would be just the massive mode in the bulk, which is a D7 brain. And how D7 brain is separated from D3 brain will corresponding to the mass of this fermion. So they study the effective description of it. So there is no magnetic field. So if you look at their solution, and so this is like brain profile, and this is X9 direction, this is the rho direction, and for R plus equal to 0, it's a 0 temperature, and this side is UV, and this side is IR. So when it goes to UV, you can see it doesn't really touch X9 equal to 0. When X9 equal to 0 corresponding to massless fermion, and so so normal solution will have condensate in IR. It also has corresponding to a massive fermion in UV. So the effective description of quantum Hall effect would just be a whole bunch of massive fermion in the bulk in 2 plus 1 dimension. So so there is one thing interesting about this topological insulator-like system, like quantum Hall system, is they have phase transition, but the phase transition, different phase corresponding to different n. So normally, if we think about phase transition, that would be like there have some other parameter, like in Landau's theory. But in topological system, n, different n actually label different phases. So like, for example, if you have n equal to 2 to n equal to 3, you cannot go from n equal to 2 to 3 without closing the gap, which means that means there are two different phases. So closing the gap would be some transition point. It's also a critical point in quantum system. So that's why, I mean, from four different n, there are like different phases. If you from one n, n equal to 1 to 1 equal to 2, that would be like a topological phase transition. And so how do you see there is a topological phase transition from this graph? It's by, if you can see from a mass bigger than 0 to mass smaller than 0, there's a finite jump in IR, which means if you are like moving from here to, from n bigger than 0 to n smaller than 0, you will be having a phase transition. So this phase transition actually is a topological phase transition in quantum Hall effect.
So this is describing the position of the D7 brains in that background metric.
Yes.
And it's at zero temperature.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying that even if the UV sort of mass goes to zero,
mm-hmm.
there's a finite sort of gap in the IR?
Yeah, you have the solution, which is like a zero, this red line, but that solution is unstable. So it's,
if you move a little bit away.
Yeah, it will form like a jumping IR.
But that, it doesn't stay finite in the limit, right? I mean, there's no scale.
There is a scale because they added the flat brain limit at the end, so there's a scale.
Oh, I see. That's such a scale.
That gives
a scale. I guess it's the ADS. Yeah, it's the ADS. Maybe it's the ADS radius that gives a scale. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're asking the scale of this finite?
Yeah, I was wondering what sets the scale. But I think David is telling me that since we're not in the near horizon limit, there's no scale invariance for the whole metric.
Right. So you have a scale.
You've got to have the ADS radius sets the scale.
Cool. So yeah, I mean, in the original paper, they also study finite temperature. Basically they say finite temperature, this whole process smooths out. So probably this transition becomes smooth, but that's not the main topic of this paper, of this talk. So I hope that's clear. And okay, let's study the non-abelian setup of what we did. So we have D5 prop brain, and we also have this D3 background, but now it turned to normal ABS5 cross S5. And we also have a D7 brain, which is behind the horizon, and which sources a night flux, which is extended into that direction. So this is, if you write down the Lagrangian for your supergravity, and this one is an axion field in your Lagrangian, which takes the form, normal axion field form of that. And this beta is flux strength. And this W is a three direction here. So, and people have studied this sort of flux recently because they use it to study this anisotropic quark gluon plasma. So basically, they turn on this flux, which has a gradient along three directions, and then which is one of the field theory directions, and your quark gluon plasma will sort of like got polarized to that direction. So if we think about the Myers effect we just talked about, so under this flux, D5 brain, if you have more than one D5 brain, D5 brain will pop up, and it will pop up into the direction which flux is extended, but 5 brain is not. So it will be like a 2, 5, and 9 directions. So when those people study this quark, polarized quark gluon plasma, they also solve the D3, D7 brain system when you considering the back reaction of the D7 brain. And this is their result. It's a solution of the type 2B supergravity. And it's an asymptotic ADS solution. So when R go to infinity, it will go back to ADS. And when R goes to horizon, the near horizon limit is, we call it Lipschitz-like point solution. So it's a scaling invariant solution. And is there any questions? So if you take B to log R and C to minus log R, the whole thing go back to ADS. So this is the setup, and this is the action of the D5 prop brain and the non-abelian case. And we also have pullback metric, which we can see, we can derive from that 10D metric. This is a 6D metric. And we can also write down the
Okay, I just missed something. So you're saying the full metric is the full metric is known beyond the probe limit? Sorry,
So for the 10D metric is it's beyond the probe limit of the D7 brain, but the 5 brain is still in probe limit.
Right. But the D7 you say is beyond the probe. Okay, yes, that's good.
Yeah, so forget about D5 brain. D5, and there's a D7 brain has a flux, and this flux back react to D3. So this is a 10D metric, but 5 brain is in problem.
Okay.
Seems like I'm talking too fast. Is there any place I didn't explain?
So this metric has the D3 and the D7 fully back reacted, both of them?
D3. Well, there's many D3 brain first because it will form the, they have a, like a 5 form, so it's like ADS5, turning to ADS5. And they also axion field from the 7 brain, so you solve the supergravity completely like this, fully back react. It's also at zero temperature. So it's not at zero temperature, it will be much more complicated.
But it's a non-supersymmetric configuration, right? It's
That's right. That's right. Because they have 6 NB direction way.
What is B and C?
What?
B and C are.
In that metric, are they known analytically or are they just solved for? Yeah.
They're known numerically.
Numerically.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, they're known numerically, but at zero temperature, they have two, this is the interplanetary solution from Lifshitz scaling invariant solution to the asymptotic ADS solution. So you know the two limit of that solution. And so there's like some sort of interpolating function of that.
But this is the background you work with when you put D5 brains in?
That's right. Well, there's something wrong with my computer when I was. So they said my Windows is not authentic, but it's not true. I mean, the Windows comes with a computer, so.
Well, it comes with bugs over here, too.
Yeah. So there are some other questions? So let's get into some algebras. So just write down now a billion DBI action, and you have pullback metric. And remember, now your D5 brain popped into some pop. So it got popped on two and 5 and 9 direction. So now your radial coordinate will include a contribution, although they're small, from 5 and 9 directions. And you have a 9 flux, and if you only take three of them, like 2, 5, 9, and contract them with your scalar field of 2, 5, 9 direction. So it's just x is like a phi in my S notation. So then you can write down the potential. The difference is, so I keep the whole BI action here rather than expand it into quartic order, because now we're not on flat space anymore in my S. When Maya studied, the whole thing is in flat space, so the leading order will just be trivial. Now our leading order is not, because we're in some weird numeric background, and so we have this potential. And so we still take SU2 ansatz. The x2, 5, 9 will all be the function of rho, which is like the radial direction. And the sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3 will just be Pauli matrix, and they have the commutator like a normal Pauli matrix. And we plug those one in, and we can get the full solution of this D5 brain embedding. And to understand the fourth solution, let's look at asymptotic behavior in UV. And we are, epsilon is a small number, and x2 go to a constant plus this thing, and x5, 9 go to a epsilon times x function, and then you can get two normal differential equation, which has an analytical solution. So remember, what's x2? I mean, x2 is a field theory direction. So it's a real geometrical direction in field theory, and it takes a form of this. And so probably now we say two. And it just means, so it actually means the physical separation of these two brain in field theory direction. So in dual picture, you say it's a separation of those two fermions in quark, gluon, plasma background. And the F rho, well, just, I mean, it due to, well, the F rho would be the separation of the D7 brain to this horizon D3 brain. And so it corresponding to, it due to the mass, the fermion mass on the field theory side, and it takes the form of this. Beta is a flux strength, and A is a geometrical separation of the two quarks. K is some constant. So if you look at this, and when beta goes to zero, you will have oscillating solution, and that corresponding to the instable solution we just saw. So when we were talking about that quantum Hall gravity due system, they have instability if the whole system is in pure ADS5 cross S5. But with this flux turned on, we stabilize this solution as long as flux is big enough, and we have a stable, nice solution. So what does this solution mean? Well, here's an example of a numerical solution. Get it from Mathematica. And so this is a rho direction. The horizontal axis is a rho direction, and the vertical axis is x2. It's x2 for this one, this is x5, x9 for this one. So we can see first that it's a Minkowski embedding because it doesn't really touch horizon. And so it will come back at the other side. So what does this solution mean? And it means, so our x5, x9, at before, we know it due to some, it's a separation from D3 brain, it due to some mass term of the field theory you studied. And now it have off-diagonal mass. So it's like a non-local mass because, well, not exactly non-local because they are in some quark gluon. So it due to a like two quark, two 2D quark. The quark are like 2D because the D3, our D3, D5 brain over intersect in 1 plus 1 dimension. And those two quarks, which are 2D, they have the non-local mass term. And also, it cured the instability in abelian case, which with all of this non-abelian structure, we will get instability just like what those people study quantum Hall would get. So it's also a dual picture of the Myers effect because those coordinates actually due to some real operator in field theory. Right? There any questions?
You know, I mean, in another context, the holographic dual of the Myers effect is quark confinement. Is that at all related?
It's what?
In some versions of holographic QCD, the holographic dual of the Myers effect is quark confinement.
Um, like
this is not related to that, I guess.
I think they're related in some devious way. It's because basically if you look at it, it's like a two quark which has some relation, you cannot separate them too much. They also, I mean, they have been study of the holographic side of Maya's effect, but they all based on the dual picture. It's a, so it view the Maya's effect as a bound state of the higher dimensional brain of the with the lower dimensional brain. So yeah. So there's no non-abelian structure of this. But I believe if that dual picture is correct, of course it's the two interpretations should be related. So I actually have a question, like how, so Maya's claim those two pictures are related, the non-abelian, but how good are they? I mean, are those like really, really the same thing, or it just happened to be have the same energy
as
some
other? The brain of versus the non-abelian coordinates.
Yeah.
Well, they're the same object.
Just in different limits.
They're different large, small, and train scale. If you have a bindi two brain with N D zero brains attached, there's this flux within brains, this brains within brains picture of my Douglas.
You compute the induced
D zero brain charge from the flux on the brain, and then when you get an integer, you get these things. So if you know the charge, you can basically compute the size of the brain. Where it really works well is in Westminster with the models. Three dimensions. So there people know the exact spectrum of D-brains and the zero brain and the advanced states and those as you do as in number of models. I think that has been completely solved. And then in the other cases it's just limits. Because there's alpha prime corrections that are not included in various places.
Yeah, the picture of the puffed up brain should only hold when the curvature is small compared to the string scale. The dual picture where it's a point-like object with non-abelian coordinates, it's not clear if that's valid kind of beyond some, you know, very small radius. So I think they're dual in that sense.
Yeah, but as I said, this has two Westmino Winton models.
Yeah.
I think Malmasina and Greg Moore and Cyber Company did some study of the brains of the SU2, and because there you have the flux background already there, you can actually really get on the nose exactly how long these things are supposed to be working.
So you're basically saying, so it's like a puffed up description is basically in supergravity, and the bound state is more like in string theory.
No, the bound state is supergravity. Because you have a higher clean brain with flux in it. And the puffed up description is this kind of non-abelian regime. The claim is that you can interpolate this from one and the other one when you go from weak to strong upper.
Well, I'm sorry, what did you say? From what?
You can interpolate between one and the other one when you go from weak to strong coupling, meaning when the positions get big enough, you're not doing any more an expansion around the point. And then the interpretation in terms of the bigger brain becomes more useful. And I think that's the canonical story. As I said, this is the place where this is really understood in complete detail is in this SU2 was in the
models. So you're saying that's a context where you can change the coupling and see it go from one of these descriptions to the other?
The Westminster Witten models have a level, and then you have the complete spectrum of brains for the SU2 Westminster Witten model.
Yeah, and the one that matches what one of these two.
No, not as a limit. It's exactly because it's just conformal field theory. Use the boundary state technique for D brains.
You have an exact statement of what the spectrum is.
Yes.
And there are these two approximations you could make, one based on higher dimensional brains, the other based on non-abelian small brains. Are you saying that both of those are also exact, or just are you saying that the exact answer matches one of those two approximations?
Yeah, exactly. As far as I remember, that's the
Great.
Okay. So you're saying exact solution is Western nominal SU to a WZ W.
You have to change Nash Schwartz, how you call it? You have to change your monomon BTO for the short BTO, because that's what you're having to do this to solve these cosmonomons. Then you can solve for the exact spectrum of states there, and then you can see all this story playing out.
Cool. This is the last slide.
All right, do we have any more questions?
Any comments?
Yeah, where's the integer for the plateau?
Oh, so the thing is that when you look at the bulk, the integer is a topological number, so you only come up when you look at the surface mode. When you look at the bulk, it's just you count you count the number of fermions, basically. Because in the bulk, basically, you're just filling the Landau level, so you count the number of fermions, tell positive mass fermion minus negative mass fermion. That gives you the topological number. So as long as, so it only matters is whether positive or negative in a bulk. So hope that's a good one. So there's in topological insulator, there's also this holographic thing you can think about. So it's like in the bulk, there's just the normal Landau level. There's a whole bunch of electrons fill all the levels. And so the only thing that matters is how many of those electrons. How many positive mass electrons minus negative mass electrons for quantum particle.
Sorry, I didn't get it. Where is the integer in the holographic description?
The integer?
You know where the integer comes from in the quantum Hall effect? We want to know in the holographic description where is the integer. I didn't get it.
There's
no integer, it's just plus one or minus one, basically, or one or zero, basically. That's what
yeah, it's so like how many Landau levels do you feel?
Yeah, okay.
So if you count the number of bulk fermions, that's your integer, pretty much.
So I mean, you're putting in a certain number of d5 grains, probe d5 grains.
Yes, sir.
But that number doesn't come up. Does that?
That number depends on what non-abelian matrix, what representation you are looking at as SU2. Like in this case, if I study the Pauli matrix, it's like 2x2. So we can see it as 2 d5 grains in some sense, but they're like do the weird brain stuff to enhance to a higher symmetry or something. So it's like really 2 5 grains.
That doesn't correspond to any of the integers in the integer Hall effect.
So first we're not studying the quantum Hall effect. We're studying the 1+1 system, and normal quantum Hall effect is 2+1 system. I mean, so the system we're studying has a little bit different setup compared to the system of that quantum Hall. So it has 1+1 dimension. So it might correspond to 1D spin chain system, which might have some edge state. And I mean, they have like a 1D topological insulator as well. So the direct dual picture of the system we're studying is a 2-quark in quark gluon plasma background. There's separate 2 quarks. They should be like 2D quarks rather than 4D quarks. And I'm not saying this thing really tell people what's the dual picture of the mass effect. It's just there's a numerical solution show you how those 2 quarks related.
All right.